Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And our next episode, or this particular episode, we're actually on, well, what is this? Day four of covering the Constitution. So it being Wednesday, we started last Friday. It's day four. And we're still in Article 1, and actually we're just wrapping up Section 8. There's still Section 9 and 10 to go through. We will probably end up covering Section 1 or wrapping up with Section 1 today, probably. But I'm just giving you a good look at what it takes to kind of go through this to, one, highlight what we're violating, what we're not doing, and what we should be doing. This way you kind of not just get the Constitution, but it allows me to highlight exactly what's said and how it's supposed to be done so that you understand how far the federal government is operating outside the framework. Now, this show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that is going... We're not about entertainment here. We're not about, you know, trying to wow you with really snappy, pithy, good, you know, commentary or sound bites that, you know, can live its own life and just go through, you know, the internet and social media in a viral way. We really don't care about that. What we care about is that you understand the basics and that you really understand the framework of the Constitution and how it was defined. That's why we go through these source documents. We believe that if you have the education of this thing we call the owner's manual of our government, the Constitution, as well as the ratification debates, because the ratification debates literally delineate those terms and definitions in such a way that it's not in the Constitution. You cannot understand the Constitution without reading the ratification debates. And that's all we care about. That way, once we've given you all of the facts and remove opinions and remove editorializing and all of that, you should be coming to the same conclusions as we are, that the federal government is non-compliant, that all of our problems stem from that non-compliance, and that, as Madison pointed out, interposition, or today what we refer to as Republic Review, is the only process to get the federal government into compliance. And it will trickle down to the states and local government as well. By the time this is all done, if this moves forward as it should, then by the time this is all done, we're going to find how the states have realigned themselves and has actually opened themselves up to become a stronger, more independent, more autonomous state and counties and communities. Because the interdependency of regulating the law and so forth is the responsibility of us citizens. I know we went down this path of hiring mercenaries, but you can see what happens when we hire mercenaries to basically enforce laws. I mean, look at what the BLM did. Look at what's going on with all of these federal enforcement agencies. Now, we have city police. We have sheriffs. Instead of having such a large city police force, why don't we actually utilize the militia and reduce that staffing, reduce that cost of government, and allow because if we the people are more involved, then crime will actually go down, especially if we the people are armed and able to enforce the laws. You see my point? That's why the studies have only proven where the citizenry is armed and the citizenry is active in enforcing the law, crime goes down dramatically. Well, okay, but that doesn't bode well for giving these guys, you know, a uniform badge and a pension, because those pensions are nice. If we want to actually lower our costs, then let's free up labor for these guys instead of, you know, they can be, because if you're a militia, if you're active duty militia and you're actively working in, you know, crime support and that type of thing, you're going to get compensated, but it also allows you to do other things as well. And it allows you to actually become far more versatile. If you look at the framers, and if you look at how the framers functioned in society, they built their own furniture, they built their own homes. I mean, did you ever see, have you ever gone through Monticello and look at what Thomas Jefferson did in his clocks and some of the creations, the photography? All of the types of things he did was, he did it because it was easy to learn the principles of, you know, science and those types of things. As long as you got a basic education, you can start doing these things. Problem is, we're not educating anymore. We're indoctrinating. And all of these things go back to the fact that these are all unconstitutional, and we have all sorts of things that are being done unconstitutionally. So, as you know, this show is not about entertaining. This is not about the news. This is about being engaged in the solution and getting you to be a part of that solution and stop being a part of the problem. There's lots of conservatives who are a part of the problem. And we go through that quite a bit. And if you need to know more about how you might be a part of the problem, well, just stick around. We'll get to that. Now, we've got a good company out there called Timber Nation. If you're looking for good quality furnishings, solid, hard wood furnishings, go check them out, timbernation.com. We've got the We the People calendar. If you're looking for a calendar that actually will teach your family a little history about the Constitution and details about the Constitution, and we're trying to keep them as, you know, accurate and on spot, and we are working with those folks there doing that. So go check out wethepeoplecalendar.com. If you're looking for protection for your devices, such as printers or other high-cost electronics, switches, and or if you want to call them radio, ham radio, those types of things, get these covers so that you can get radio covers. They're called radiodustcovers.com. Go check them out. We also have a relationship with AdLocal. If you need email or other ISP type of services, infrastructure support services, then, and that's basically for your internet, that type of stuff, domain, give these guys, you know, your business, because these guys will absolutely take care of you. So with all of that, we've got these four companies that we're promoting. We're not being reimbursed by them. And what we want to do is actually get these companies to start supporting the Constitution part. I mentioned the We the People calendar. They're looking for who they can use because they definitely want to support something constitutional. I told them, what's better than the Constitution Party? Boom. And so we're hoping that that's where they, you know, start moving their proceeds. But they got to start getting proceeds. So check them out. Get at least one calendar from them. And you will see there's a lot of people that are looking to buy these to give away and or to include with their businesses and products and so forth. So check it out. And if you really want to actually help stir the pot with progressives, give them a constitutional calendar. They're going to start learning that most of the stuff that they're doing is unconstitutional. What better way to aggravate them? By giving them that calendar. Now, Red Pill Expo is rapidly approaching. It is the first weekend of November. Get your tickets, get your travel, get yourself there. And as a matter of fact, we need you to get your state legislators there. They have no admission fees. They'll only have to pay for the catering and the side stuff, the VIP stuff. But their attendance does not require them to pay. And or if they are going to stream to attend, they don't need to pay for that. But they need to register so that they can actually be fed the Zoom meeting so that we can actually get them into the Zoom meeting on Saturday afternoon and as well as Sunday afternoon at the end, where we actually have the legislators and people in politics talking about how we can take over politics. And instead of, you know, complaining about town hall becoming town hall. That's basically the gist of it. So with that, we want you to understand we also have a comment line. Any questions, problems, things that you're hearing, learning that you know, you disagree with, 425-270-5416. And for heaven's sakes, Harry, I hope you're listening. We're doing this for not just everybody, but you are included in everybody. We're definitely doing this primarily for leaders to get engaged. And if you're somebody that wants to lead in being a part of the solution, this is where you need to be. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and move into the where we left off. And we're still in Article 1, Section 8. And we just basically covered the exclusive legislation, which is completely being violated. And we're also talking about exercising like authority over all places purchased at the consent of. So in other words, they're obtaining things without absolutely purchasing them. And more importantly, the federal government is possessing land and needful buildings that aren't needful because they're not defined within the Constitution and the scope, such as these environmental lands, these buildings for this unconstitutional tyranny and so forth. So let's wrap up when we come back with the final power, the enumerated power in Section 8. And this has all to do with the necessary and proper clause. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we kind of go into this final one, this is really not necessarily an enumerated power, but what it is the kind of the summation. So one of the things that we identified when we went through the ratification debates was this thing called the Necessary and Proper Clause. And so this final subsection 17 or subsection 18, if you count the preamble, if you look at this Necessary and Proper Clause, Nicholas basically said, by creating this clause at the end of the enumerated powers is the same thing as at the end of each enumeration, stating that Congress shall have the necessary power and proper power for carrying out into execution this power. So the way this is written is the one of the parts you have to be very, very, you know, attuned to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers. In other words, they can't use this clause to say, well, we find it necessary and proper that we create this law to control your, you know, your behavior if you're not vaccinated or mandating. They don't have the power. They cannot use this clause with anything. The scope of this clause is very specific, that it is tied strictly to the foregoing powers, not to anything else. Not to any other power listed in the Constitution or process, procedure, or anything else, because the foregoing powers list very specifically that those are the powers that are vested for, you know, this necessary and proper clause. That's it. And then it states this, and all powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in the department or officer thereof. So in other words, they have the authority to create laws that are in pursuant to those enumerated powers and only those powers, as long as they're necessary and proper. In other words, they just can't say, you know what, we want to stretch the determination of what that is. If it's not necessary for the carrying out of that very specific power, they can't do it. They can't use it. Now, Section 9, Section 9 is the constraints that were placed on the federal government. Now, if you look at these constraints, these are the things that the federal government cannot do. So the first one right here, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. So in other words, what they did in this very first clause or subsection, so you got Section 9 and this is Subsection 1. In Subsection 1 of Section 9, they basically laid out that the states would have full autonomy and control over the migration or importation of persons into each of the states. And that for people that are being imported, that the state may pay, because it's imposed on such importation. Let me point that out. That Congress shall not be able to infringe or not be able to pull this power back from the states prior to the year 1808. But a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation, not migration. In other words, immigrants coming to the states, there was no tax. But this was very, 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 very specific to the importation of slaves. So that the federal government basically put a duty tax, and what it did was this raise the cost of doing business in the slave trade. So, you know, if you really needed slaves, you're going to have to pay the $10 fee for each slave or the $10 tax. So as this moves forward, we can see that by 1808, the states can no longer import. Thus, the tax goes away as well. Why? Because the federal government at that point in time has full control over the importation and or actually the immigration. The importation was strictly for slaves, and this federal government was not in the business of importing slaves, so they would not be able to then execute the importation of persons. The only thing they took full control over was the migration of persons in coming into the United States and where they wanted to go and so forth. Now, over time, there were some restrictions being placed on certain migrations of people, you know, like Catholics and those types of things. And so the federal government started getting a little bit more involved in having to manage. Well, you know, they have a limitation on how many Catholics can go into that state. So you'll have to go into these other states. That's the same thing with Mohammedans. They did not allow, as a matter of fact, every state had a ban on Mohammedans coming into their state as migrating people. It was one thing for them to come in as emissaries. It's another thing for them to come in as visitors, but wholly another thing that they were coming in as immigrants, and they would not allow. That's one of the reasons why the first mosque wasn't built until, I think it was the 1930s in America. Because as you start looking at, you know, why is it that there wasn't mosques in America sooner? Because there were these hardcore constraints in not allowing the migration of these people into America. Because they understood at that point in time that Mohammedans did not respect the Constitution, nor did they respect the laws of the land. They were theocracies, and it was their intent to basically, wherever they go, it is their intent to take control of government and make government modeled after their theocracy. That's how it is. That's why they, you know, they do exactly what they do in getting into a land, a country, a state. I mean, where is the Supreme Court in calling for a separation of church and state when in Dearborn, Michigan, there's these sirens that are calls to prayer? Or even during, you know, at the Dulles Airport, these calls to prayer for Mohammedans. You know, here's a government institution. That airport is a government institution, and that airport is providing calls to prayer. When they are saying, oh, well, you can't do that if you're Christian. My point is that the government is scared to death and bends over backwards for Mohammedans, because they don't want to be the target of their terroristic tactics and how they implement and actually create fear among people. So, I mean, that's what they do. So back to Section 9 and the next section, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Okay, so rebellion or cases of invasion. Now, we just had the rally and protest for January 6th, Justice for January 6th. There are people that basically have lost their right to the writ of habeas corpus. In other words, their right to a trial and to be charged and to be processed. Habeas corpus is a recourse in law through which a person can report an unlawful detention or imprisonment to a court and request that the court order the custodian of the person, usually a prison official, to bring the prisoner to court to determine whether the detention is lawful. There are all of these people that they are detaining in violating the Constitution, and they're saying that it's in case of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it during the rebellion. So it's one thing to throw somebody in jail on January 6th because they thought that they were being rebellious, when they hadn't even done any of this to the looters and the protesters and the civil unrest, the insurrections in Portland and all around this world, or all around this country and the world. So bottom line is, why are they doing this? Why are these people still being retained without any sight of bail, without any, I mean, these people's rights are being violated, the fact that they're being held by, you know, by the government. This should scare the crap out of everybody, that the government believes they're not accountable to the law, that they do not have to provide this right of habeas corpus to these folks. And so what would be the best recourse for everybody that wants to stand up for these people? First Amendment petitions. First Amendment petition would basically call them out and say, show us where there is this, you know, this rebellion that is requiring or invasion, because those are the two parameters right here. Unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, it's one thing to say, yeah, down on the southern border, we've got an invasion and we may need to suspend habeas corpus, but not up in D.C. Fact of the matter is that they're violating the Constitution and they're using this long-term incarceration as a weapon of interrogation, making these people think that, you know, all is lost. They can't do this, folks. And so what's happened, and there's a lawsuit right now with Todd Engle and the Bundys and so forth. They're going after the federal government for millions of dollars for incarcerating them when they violated their rights. And this is going to get really interesting. And as a matter of fact, I know that Jeanette Finnegan is suing for the wrongful death of her husband. The government has no business doing any of this stuff, and they will lose. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we understand, they cannot suspend your... They just can't throw you in jail without charging you and without a speedy trial. These are rights that you have. And they cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus unless there's actually martial law that has been declared. This was clarified in the Virginia ratification debates, and the martial law can only be declared in the places where the militia is not deployed. See, the reason that they put the National Guard in there in the D.C. was to make it seem like they deployed the militia. The National Guard is not the militia, because the National Guard is not based on county and a county relationship with the sheriff and so forth. The organization is done state and state only. It is not apportioned for the militia for the state based on the needs of having a militia in every county. That is the whole point of a militia. Secondly, if the National Guard was to replace the militia, then it would have required an amendment to do that, and actually going everywhere where they mention militia to change that to mean National Guard. So what they did was they just said, we're going to ignore that. We're going to create this, and we're going to say this is the same. No, the only way that they can do that, whether you like it or not, is they have to do an Article 5 amendment. In other words, they have to get the states to buy into this, because the states bought into this thing called the militia. And even though everybody's ignored it, they don't understand it, there's a reason why the states have to be the final authorizer, the entity to delegate these changes, because they're the parties to the compact, not the federal government. Anyway, so this is being violated, and based on previous type of stuff that was being done, it was considered a minor or a significant but not egregious. It's now gotten to the state of egregiousness, because we now see from the Bundy case and all of these other cases where the federal government takes somebody and imprisons them for a year or two or three. And you're going, oh my gosh, how unfair is this? Do the people realize how unconstitutional this is? No, they don't. Now, the next one, this is a good one. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Now, we know what a ex post facto law is, right? We understand that an ex post facto law is a law that, you know, where something was legal and all of a sudden they made it illegal and now they're coming after you because you bought property that had a well on it, and to have a well now is illegal. And you will be thrown in jail and fined, and to a maximum of the extent of the law. They can't do that. They can't necessarily take something that there was no law in governing and then create the law and say, okay, everybody that's got a car in their garage for repair purposes, but they're not using it, well, that's illegal now, and we're coming to throw you in jail. See, they can't do that. It's the same thing with saying that if you buy property that doesn't have a well on it, you can't put a well on it. No, if you own that property and you could put a well on it, and then they say you can't put a well on it, that's an ex post facto law, something that was legal, and then they made a law that made it illegal for you to do that. They can't do that. That's a clear protection. They cannot pass any ex post facto laws. Bills of attainder are the same way. They cannot pass laws of corporal punishment or pass laws that actually punish you because of, a class, because you're not a vaxxer. If you don't take a vaccination and you refuse to do that, and they pass these laws to punish you, to keep you from being able to enjoy your privileges as a U.S. citizen, then they're violating the bill of attainder, bill of punishment type of law. The bottom line is these constraints are placed on government, so government cannot be tyrannical in punishing and going after its citizens. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the consensus or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Well, this right here, the bill of attainder and the ex post facto laws, are clearly being violated along with the writ of habeas corpus. Next one, next subsection. No duty or tax shall be laid on articles exported from any state. So in other words, there's no way the federal government can start taxing interstate commerce. There's no way a state can tax another state for them, bringing in commerce from that state into your state. And a great way of doing that, a great way to look at this, is looking at the car industry and how a car manufacturer actually decides to build a car. If Detroit builds a car and their emissions are what they are, and California says, hey, we need you to make that car meet these emission standards. Well, there's nothing in here that says they can use emissions as standards. So there's nothing in here that forces Detroit to actually build cars to meet California. If California wants cars to meet their standards, then they can build those cars, but they cannot prohibit the purchase of these cars in their state, because there is this relationship that one state cannot give preference or actually I guess I'd call it a negative or basically boycott the ability of products to be able to come from one state into theirs because they don't like their emission standards. Now, you can't force a company into doing that. There are ways of, not coercing, but there are ways of convincing a company that it's in their best interest to be able to create a product and be able to, you know, modify their product to meet your needs. But bottom line, Detroit could have easily said, okay, California, you know, we kind of go through a lot in manufacturing cars. We'd like to see you manufacture cars so you can pollute your own area in creating these, you know, less pollutant cars. There you go. But to be clear, no state has the authority to create and or lay down any kind of tax or duty on articles being exported from that state. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. So if you understand what they're really trying to say here, is that they're just trying to actually create this fair gaming system where, you know, one state cannot go out of their way and actually be able to be able to cause harm to another state or give themselves an advantage over that state and or kind of hold that state hostage for goods that it may need to receive that have to come through its ports. See, one of the things, and we'll actually get into this because it's in the next one, no preference given by any regulation or commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obligated to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. So, and a little bit further on, I believe this is where they say it's in Section 10, because the federal government, these are restrictions on the federal government. In Section 10, it basically states that no state shall create a tax other than the needful taxes for rebuilding or for, you know, maintaining their highways, waterways, and their transportation. So a state can levy a tax, but only the needful tax of what they have to do for maintaining their infrastructure. They cannot make money off of allowing the movement of commerce in going through their state into another state. So this was a huge protection of the interior states to make sure they weren't paying, you know, through the teeth on, you know, on the maintenance of the highways, the waterways, as it got all the way to their state. So this is where we start seeing how the benefit of the union actually starts really coming in, because now you see that, you know, what you pay for watermelons in one state to another, for the most part, is going to be the same, because there's not, and if there is, it's a marginal tax. It's not a tax where, like the economic union, where they're trying to do a value-added tax to pay for their health care, their dental care, their vacations. I mean, all of this fluff that they have put into, because their citizens are entitled to an annual vacation, their holiday. And so they create these taxations on any product going into the economic union with this VAT tax, value-added tax. So anyway, let me go into this next one. No money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. So no money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law. So in other words, they're taking money out of the treasury to pay for things that has not been made by law in pursuant to the Constitution. And they're supposed to be making these accounts of receipts and expenditures of all public monies, which shall be published from time to time. But they don't really do that either. So this whole subsection is just one blatant violation and being ignored by the federal government. When we come back, we've got the last subsection of Section 9, which means going into Section 10, we will cover the restrictions placed on states. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what we have is we've got this thing out there called the Constitution, and there's this amendment, because we're coming up on this part of the Constitution where it's called the No Title of Nobility Shall Be Granted. Now, a lot of people do not know this, but there has been this, and I'll just call it, this concept of no ability for a person to be able to take on a nobility from a foreign state or what have you. It was called the Titles of Nobility Amendment. It was the 13th Amendment, and it was passed on May 1st, 1810, and submitted to the states for ratification. Now, so if you look at what this, the language of this amendment, let's see if I can find it real quick, because I wanted to find very specifically what the language was. And that way you can kind of compare it to this, the Title of Nobility Amendment language, L-N-G-U-N-G. Okay, so this was, let me see here. It keeps on going to the Title of Nobility. This might have it right here. Okay, so in 1810, Maryland Senator Philip Reed introduced the Titles of Nobility Amendment, which would have worked, which would have revoked citizenship from any American who accepted a title of nobility from a foreign country. You might be wondering, well, what's the big deal? And you wouldn't be alone. For many years, even historians couldn't figure out the motives behind this amendment. The Titles of Nobility Amendment is a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution. The 11th Congress passed it on May 1st, 1810, and submitted to the state legislatures for ratification. It would strip United States citizens from any citizen who accepted a title of nobility from an emperor, king, prince, or foreign power. On two occasions between 1812 and 1816, it was within two states of the number needed to become part of the Constitution. Congress did not set a time limit for its ratification, so the amendment is still pending before the states. Ratification by the amendment, additional 26, is now needed for its adoption. So anyway, a few years ago, Iowa Republicans claimed that the legitimate 13th Amendment to the Constitution was missing. The debate, in part, of a historical detective story, which, with some surprising twist, that it is still taking place. Anyway, the whole point is that these titles of nobility was to strip people of their citizenship. Now, let's read Article 1, Section 9, Section 9. This is the last subsection of Section 9. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. So, in other words, anybody that is holding office cannot receive this title. This intent behind the 13th Amendment was to actually stop the Bar Association from allowing these people in the lawyer trade to becoming esquires, because it was considered a title of nobility, and along with it was the ability for you to now be able to go into court and be able to charge people obscene amounts of money for doing legal things. And this is the way they started creating a monopoly and hijacking our court system to what it is today. It's basically a money laundering situation for what some people would call a crime syndicate. So, and actually, there's a gal, her name's Catherine Duran. I would love to have her on, and it would probably take a show or two, but I want to give her all the latitude to try to create this webbing of just how far they've gone in creating such an illegitimate government that people are absolutely clueless in understanding how far away they really are from being in compliance with the Constitution. We're so far out. I've told you, they've built the House of Cards, and they've got these swimming pool suites on some of these floors in this House of Cards. And I'm telling you, friends, it doesn't take much to blow this down. We just need the states to actually assume the authority, and it's done. Now, I'm working with her in getting into that situation, getting into that level of knowledge to understand that the states possess that kind of power. She still clings on to our elections are illegitimate and the way things are being done. It's not. Because when the people actually vote for a representative to represent them under the organic constitution, are the people wrong? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We have a right to demand that they start applying, and we have the ability to vote out old and vote in new, and we have the ability to use our First Amendment rights of petition as well as common law grand juries enforcing these things to happen. So anyway, but we'll get to that probably once we finish going through the Constitution, because I honestly think you need to understand just how bad, how twisted, and how far it has gotten. What Obama has done, what Bush Sr. has done, what all of these people over, what Eisenhower had done, what all of these people over the course of the last 150 years have done, and it's only gotten to higher stakes and larger magnitudes of corruption and violations of the Constitution. Now, Section 10. This is a good one. Section 10, these are the constraints that are placed on states. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal. So in other words, they can't declare war and then, basically turn these privateers and or these corsairs out to, go obtain, the ships and goods from all of these bad people out at sea. So they're constrained from being able to do that. No state shall enter into a treaty, blah, 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 emit bills of credit make anything but gold. So they can't make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debt, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Okay, so in other words, they can't actually allow people to become esquires. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay, and by the way, many of these parts are being violated, just like the nobility of the federal government. This is the same thing here. And we're finding that they're passing bills of attainder, ex post facto laws, laws impairing obligations of contract. Oh, shoot. Obama did that when he basically said that Chrysler, instead of it going into conservatorship, and that the shareholders, not the shareholders, but the bondholders, lost their bonds. I mean, when it comes down to bankruptcy law, the people that are protected are those who buy the bonds. And so he turned contract law up on its head, violated that. He had no power to do that. That was a crime. Obama committed a crime when he did that. And so this is why I would love to see all of our former presidents impeached now that they've gone after Trump. Now that we've had this clarity that they can do this, let's start. We need a president with some real cojones to actually stand up and say, you know what? We need to go after all these sins of the past while we're moving forward and dismantling all of this stuff. Because I honestly think America could be doing, we can chew gum and walk at the same time. I believe that the states can start forcing the federal government into compliance while the president is actually going after and creating the cases for the, basically, for the Department of Justice to impeach these former presidents, to take them into Congress. Because, see, a sitting president is impeached by Congress. What about a former president that wasn't delegated out? So can a current president actually go and say, yeah, you violated the law? I think he can, because they never amended the Constitution to cover. But the bottom line is, if a person has access to government, they have permanent emoluments, they have these permanent benefits coming to them, then they are susceptible to impeachment, just like the while you're an actual president. You're getting details, you're getting access. I mean, you're obtaining benefits that can be removed. And the impeachment process is to remove those. So anyway, moving on. No state will, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws and the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by the state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. Interesting. Now, this is one of those things where states actually do create these laws to kind of cover the cost of the wear and tear of the roads, the ports, and those types of things. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships of war in time of peace, enter into an agreement or compact with another state. So we're going to actually cover, we're going to go back and cover these last two sections, because I didn't realize we're running out of time. I want to actually go through these two again and pick them apart so that you understand that the states are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And we will prove that to you in the next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.